Hi, and welcome to the Kubernetes podcast from Google. I'm Adam Glick.
And I'm Craig Box.
Greetings from China.
Hello. Ni hao.
Hey, Craig. Great to actually be in the same room this week. We're both here in China. So greetings to the listeners from Shanghai.
It is a pleasure to be here in a very tall building. I'm told that the hotel I'm staying at is the second highest hotel in the world.
Wow. Begging the obvious question, what is the first?
It is the Ritz-Carlton in Hong Kong. That's one of those things where it's not so much how tall the building is, it's how high up the building they chose to put the hotel.
Aha. Uh-huh.
There are hotels in the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, but they're not at the top.
I will say that I'm incredibly impressed at the architecture here in Shanghai. There is an amazing diversity of different building styles and architecture, and much of the skyline is striking.
It is. It is beautiful. When you can see it, there's been a little bit of cloud the last couple of days, so hopefully we're going to get some picturesque views of the Shanghai skyline.
Let's get to the news.
VMware announced last week that it had acquired Kubernetes company Heptio. VMware are positioning the acquisition as bolstering its credentials in the Kubernetes space and adding capabilities to its pivotal offerings. They also announced the rebranding of their VMware Kubernetes Engine beta as VMware Cloud PKS. According to their investors, Heptio had a blue-chip array of Fortune 500 customers for their Heptio Kubernetes service, including three of the four largest retailers in the world, four of the five largest telcos in the U.S., and two of the six largest financial services companies in the US. VMware have acquired all of this, as well as two of the co-founders of the Kubernetes project. We reached out to Heptio CTO Joe Bader, who we talked to in episode 12, and he said, just assure folks that we are going to continue to contribute to both Kubernetes and our open source projects.
Cisco announced that they have now signed a deal with AWS to enable their technology to work with AWS's Kubernetes service. AWS joins Google Cloud and Azure as the third company to sign a hybrid deal with Cisco. The deal is designed to allow customers to write their applications for Kubernetes, deploy them on-premises with Cisco hardware and software, and then connect to the cloud for access to Kubernetes applications hosted there. Customers can use Cisco's UI to provision clusters in either location, and there is integration with AWS's user management service. The on-premises software is priced on a subscription basis, starting around $65,000 per year for an entry-level configuration.
Contena launched version 2.0 of their Pharos Kubernetes distribution. The Finnish startup says they focus on easy and reliable upstream Kubernetes while adding features such as backup, storage management, and a web-based UI. A commercial version has also been announced. Given the events of the last fortnight, we expect them to announce their company's acquisition by the end of this episode.
Nabla containers have been released as version 0.2. Nabla are an OCI-compliant container runtime designed to restrict the access the container has to the host OS, thus restricting attacked vectors as a way to increase container isolation and application security. This latest release decreases container startup time and improves memory density.
More articles and series we've been watching. This week's Dominic Torno and Andrew Chen post is a formal decomposition of the Kubernetes API server into something called Alloy Specification Language, and this week's Stephen Ackerman comparison spreadsheet is on CNI plugins for Kubernetes networking.
The CNCF posted a handy guide to their various projects and what they do called the Beginner's Guide to the CNCF Landscape. The blog is a great way to help you learn about some of the CNCF projects that you might not be aware of and what stage they are in within the CNCF. So if you aren't sure what Telepresence, Falco, or TUF are, check out the blog post in the show notes to get up to speed.
Finally, if you're going to attend KubeCon Seattle, don't forget to register for what will either be the most brilliant or most tone-deaf piece of vendor marketing of all time, IceCubeCon. Yes, Mesosphere want to invite you to hear rap pioneer and NWA member Ice Cube in a private concert for KubeCon attendees. Please tweet us your best Ice Cube puns for reading in next week's episode.
And that's the news. Janet Kuo is a software engineer with Google Cloud focusing on Kubernetes SIGApps. She's the co-chair of the next three KubeCon events, including this week's event here in Shanghai and the upcoming events in Seattle and in Barcelona in 2019. Welcome to the show, Janet.
Thanks for having me.
When did you start working with Kubernetes?
I started working with Kubernetes in 2015. That's my first project in Google. I remember I was having a phone conversation with Tim Hawking that you all know, and he told me about this new container orchestrator, Kubernetes, and how great it is and how it will change how everything build their applications. And I decided to sign the offer with Google because of that.
Awesome choice.
Do you feel that it has changed everything? Was he correct?
Yeah, I think so. But I didn't expect Kubernetes to be so popular in so short time.
Well, your day job is working predominantly with the SIG apps crew, and you've been involved in the workloads APIs. And an area that we've interacted in the past was the process of moving the APIs to GA. For those who aren't familiar, what are the workload APIs, and what was the process of getting them to production readiness?
Workloads APIs are the APIs that allows you to deploy your applications to Kubernetes. For example, deployment, stateful set, jobs, and daemon set, things like that. And most of the users use Kubernetes through those APIs. So in order to move those APIs to GA, we need to make sure that we won't break backward compatibility. And we also need to make sure all those APIs have consistent behavior and they have complete features that most people need that fits their business needs. For example, we need to make sure that all the APIs can do rolling updates.
Right.
And they have similar fields and consistent behavior. And so in order to do that, we need to roll out new features and test it in the wild. And then if we want to make some changes, we need to make another release. For example, we shift a feature from alpha to beta, and then we make sure that we won't make any breaking changes, and then we can move them all to GA at the same time.
Okay. So they all moved to GA in the 1.9 release.
Yeah.
What has your team been working on since then?
Since then, we focus more on other stuff around workloads API. Mm-hmm. For example, I worked on garbage collection because I saw some missing pieces in garbage collections in Kubernetes. For example, I saw a lot of users, they create jobs in Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. That's for batch workloads. But they may create thousands or millions of jobs, but there's no way for you to clean up those jobs.
When you create a job and it runs to completion, would it stay around? What objects would exist after the job had completed?
The jobs will be there.
Right.
And the pods that's associated with the jobs.
But they'd be in a terminated state, for example.
Yeah.
Okay.
So for 1.12, I launched an alpha feature for you to clean up the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wrote a proposal for other resources clean up, for example, clean up config maps mm-hmm. and secrets after they are no longer being used.
How does the system know when it's no longer being used?
In the proposal, I want for a controller to watch other resources and to figure out who is referencing those config maps and secrets
right. And
figure out if they're no longer needed, then we will set a TTL in the config map or secret, and after that times out, they will be cleaned up.
So if I'm running a job and it has run to completion, I might want to be able to look at the logs for those pods for a period, for example. Can I define the period before the garbage collection kicks in for those objects?
Yeah, so for jobs cleaning up, you can also use the TTL
right. And
set it in the job.
Okay. And Google have worked a lot on the concept of an application CRD or a description for defining what it means to be an application that runs on top of Kubernetes. What's that situation?
So an application CRD is a way for you to define applications. And it's easier for you to put the metadata in it. For example, the icon of the applications and the developer of that application. And also, it's a way for you to list your application. For example, if you have a deployment and a service in your app, how do you cleanly list it in kubectl, the CLI?
Mm-hmm.
So with application CRD, it's the root of all your resources. So you can just kubectl get apps
mm-hmm.
and you'll see it. And for cleaning up, you can also use that for cleaning up. So you can kubectl delete apps and it will be cleaned up. And you can also use application CRD to show your app in the dashboard.
Why was this built as a CRD and not perhaps as a built-in primitive?
We proposed it as a built-in resource to SIG architecture. But in the end, we decided that it's better to build this outside of Kubernetes. And if it's really necessary, then we can move in to built-in API
right. In
the future.
How did you get involved in KubeCon?
A lot of people ask me this question. And actually, Dan Kahn, the CNCF director, he wrote me an email and asked me if I'm interested to be the co-chair of KubeCon.
Well, so you were sought out for the role.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
We spoke to your co-chair, Liz Rice, back in an earlier episode. What's it like working with Liz?
It's fantastic. Liz is always very excited about working on KubeCon stuff, and she also helped me on board on how everything is going in KubeCon and how to select talks and things like that.
One of the interesting things about how the events are set up is that you stagger the co-chairs so that people are able to mentor each other as part of the process. What did you learn from former chair's experience? Liz worked on the last KubeCon Europe event that helped you build a better experience here in Shanghai.
Based on her experience running the Copenhagen conference, we did a lot of improvement on the process and on how to select talks and how to improve the keynote. And we also got a few feedback from the Copenhagen audience, and we try to incorporate all the feedback, and based on that, we improve the future conferences.
What kind of improvements did you make based upon both the former experiences and you mentioned feedback that you got from attendees?
We decided to have less keynotes so that people can have more breakout sessions. They can have more time for that. And also we want to include more end user stories, so we have more user studies track. And also we invited more maintainers track, the SIG working group and CNCF project intro and deep dive sessions and things like that.
As we talk to you, it's right before the opening of KubeCon here in Shanghai. This is the first event in China, and it will be the first event with live translation. What things have you put in the program specific for the Chinese audience, or how has this been different perhaps than some of the events that previous co-chairs have put together?
The attendees might notice that on the schedule website, all the sessions are translated. Mm-hmm. You can see both the English version and the Chinese version of the talk, but we didn't specify which language will be used on the page. And so in each session, you can have a headphone to get the live translation, and each speaker are free to choose whichever language they feel comfortable to use.
That's really helpful to know, because I was quite worried about having to learn Chinese in the next day and a half. What have you learned about the China and Asian markets based on the submission? So obviously, like, your involvement has been sort of looking at what people have put through rather than designing the conference proper. But in your piece, like, what have you learned personally about what it's like here?
I learned a lot of interesting uses of Kubernetes in China. For example, I've seen talk submissions for running Kubernetes for genetic technology, mm-hmm. and also for edge and a lot of AI. I remember there's a talk about managing bikes. So that's all very interesting.
Full transparency, the reason I submitted for this KubeCon was I've never been to China before. I've been here a couple of days now. It's a really interesting place. But what can I expect from this event, perhaps different from what I might have expected from the Europe and American events that we've attended in the past?
I expect this event to be a bit different than others. And the first is that this is the first in Asia. And so the attendees might be very different from the other two events. And also a lot of local people using Kubernetes, and it's a totally different ecosystem and a lot of interesting uses, maybe something we can learn from there.
And in terms of attendees and sponsors, how many attendees will there be at the event?
We are looking to have 1,000 people.
That's a lot for a first event.
Yeah.
So you all remember back in the day when I never got to the first KubeCon in London. I'm sure it was probably like 150 people, but I was out of town that day. So for shame.
You could have been 1% of the attendees.
I could have been the 1%. Given that this is the first event in a new market, were you surprised by the number of submissions that you received to the CFP for this? Was it more or less than you might have expected?
Yeah, definitely. There are a lot of submissions than I expected. And this is also the first time I do CFP review for all the other KubeCon events. And I would say it's a long process. It takes a lot of time to go through all those submissions and a lot of interesting submissions and uses.
So having taken a look at the submissions that you got for this event, and I believe you're done selecting submissions for the Seattle event next month as well, but Barcelona's coming up next year. What would be your recommendations for people who are looking to come and speak in areas where you're looking for interesting talks to be submitted, that there might not always be a lot of talks that necessarily come in that people don't realize that people want to hear about?
If you're an end user of Kubernetes, I would encourage you to make a submission, because we want to hear the stories from the users. That's always the most interesting thing for us. And also, we favor the talks that are original, that's not given anywhere, that's not something that's already been told over and over. And also, if you have some interesting uses of Kubernetes, or you have a side project that's open source that's extending on top of Kubernetes, you can also submit that. And I've heard some people are curious if their first-time speaker would be a disadvantage for them to get accepted, but it's actually not, because we encourage first-time speakers to make submissions.
Taking off your conference organizer hat and putting your SIG Apps hat back on, you're also hosting a Birds of a Feather session or a breakout at this event. What's that?
I'm also hosting the SIG Apps intro and deep dive sessions. So for intro, I'll give the audience an overview of what SIG Apps even is and how to get involved and what's the scope of SIG Apps. And for a deep dive, it will be an open discussion. Like, you can come to ask any question you have, or you have some feature request, you can come to the deep dive.
Is there anything in particular that you would like to see in a talk, not for the conference, but to say like something cool someone's done with apps or with a workload or something related to the work in particular that you do?
I'd like to see some more maybe end-to-end story. For example, how do you use a different stack of tools to build your app from code to production, and which projects you pick and how do you integrate them? What are the pain points you have? Things like that. That'll be interesting to me.
As someone who's working on the project, what are you most excited to see in terms of where Kubernetes is going in the future? I know the last few KubeCons, there's been a lot of discussion about kind of what's next for Kubernetes. What are you most excited to see come next?
I start seeing more and more people customizing Kubernetes and extending on top of Kubernetes. So I expect to see more of that. And also, I think conformance is also very important. Although people might not find it interesting, but it's important for the users to get consistent behavior across different providers. So that's also important for me.
All right, Janet, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
You can find Janet on the keynote stage at the three upcoming KubeCon events or on Twitter at Janet_Kuo, K-U-O.
Thank you for listening. As always, if you enjoyed this show, please help us spread the word and tell a friend. If you have any feedback for us, you can find us on Twitter at KubernetesPod or reach us by email at KubernetesPodcast@google.com.
If you're quick at listening, you can still catch us on the show floor at KubeCon Shanghai. If not, do check out our website with show notes and transcriptions at KubernetesPodcast.com. Until next time, take care.
Catch you next week.